Blog Talk Radio. This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening. Good morning and welcome to Creative Conversation. Today we have a conversation with Tracy D. Hall, and we're going to explore and investigate the intersection between purpose and experimental. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning. How are you, Alpha?
I'm fine. And thank you so much for agreeing for this call. I know we were, putting it together and I was doing your research, an hour into it, and I'm just really glad you're able to, call in and talk with us. Could you talk a little bit about yourself and what you do? And we're talking to you from the Joyce Foundation today.
Yes.
Okay.
So again, thank you so much to Alpha Phantom Gallery for having me on the podcast this morning. And I am currently the director of the culture program at the Joyce Foundation, which is located here in Chicago, and invest in growth and just societies for the entire and across the entire Great Lakes region. So that's inclusive of Detroit and Cleveland, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Indianapolis, in addition to Chicago. And most of our culture grant making is based in Chicago, but we do support a commission award, which is called the Joyce Awards, for each of those cities in the Great Lakes. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. So what I do here is primarily I'm a grant maker. I try to think strategically about racial equity, economic mobility, and next generation stewardship for the Great Lakes. And in my personal life, when I'm not at the Joyce Foundation, I run Rootwork Gallery, which is located at 645 West 18th Street in Pilsen, which is a gallery that's really dedicated to the unseen and cultural impact. So the idea of legacy and root work, ancestral knowledge, social justice, deep investigation, vernacular and indigenous practices, street art, as well as the speculative and the experimental.
Wow, that's a mouthful, and you always have standing room only in your gallery during the openings and art talks and presentations since you've opened the door. You're located in what part of the art district in Pilsen?
Yes, the Pilsen Art District. So the Pilsen Art District has been there for a while, and for people who may be listening outside of Chicago, like many cultural districts, either formally designated or informally designated, Pilsen is a community that has seen a lot of waves of immigration, Czech and Polish, and now mostly Mexican, and always a lot of artists for the last few decades have made work there, live there too. So it's the Pilsen Cultural District, and I am just off of the main street. So it's at the intersection of 18th and Halsted, and so there's a lot of great things happening, a lot of great galleries happening along 18th, a lot of great galleries for a long time happening along Halsted, and then my gallery is just two blocks off east of Halsted on 18th, so it's on the other side, and I'm next to a gallery called Niche Gallery, NYCH Gallery, and Rootwork has been around almost 2 years. Soon it'll be 2 years.
Okay, great. And as I was researching and looking around the website at all the many, many things that you do and how you're involved, I was also exploring
Location is always the keyword. You're also at the mouth of a freeway ramp, you know, and so it's just interesting where you've positioned yourself in an ideal like location, and we're gonna continue to use that word intersect, because that's where your location is very important. In terms of that coin, we phrase tactical urbanism, and where you're located at this wonderful cross section, intersection, the expressways, the intersection, a place to go and be and move forward into. And I think it's just the way you positioned yourself with WITWORKS is just ideal. How did you even find this location?
Wow. Now that is, in a lot of ways, we're dealing with both the physical and the metaphysical, right? A lot of times at WITWORKS, and it's really intentional there. But I think in addition to WITWORKS being located right alongside, literally adjacent to a highway, it is at the crossroads. Its door is positioned diagonally in a way. And so it is really positioned at the crossroads. So that means a lot. Robert Johnson's told us about the crossroads. The crossroads play, a really important spot in sort of elevation, illumination, recognition of one's gifts. And how to navigate and use them, to the best. I think Robert Johnson is hopefully an outlier type of conversation about that, but definitely you can't talk about the crossroads without, thinking about his eerie blues about, traveling that space. But I would have to say, and I want to be really honest, that like a lot of things in my life, both my career and my own sort of artistic journey, it really has been sort of the intention has always been there. But in terms of exactly where I land, I have left that a lot of times to chance and to, sort of like a higher feeling and seeing than myself. And so I literally I had come back from New York, and I moved to Chicago from the East Coast, and have gone back and forth twice. And I come back and I thought that I might try to find a place to live, a new place to live. And a few places I was looking at on the South Side, right when we were about to, sign the paper, so to speak, something would occur on the other side of the seller or the, And so the second time it happened, a good friend said to me, this is by design. What is the second thing? What is the other thing that you would do if you weren't going to be settling down in that way? And I had been holding, in my heart, because at that time I was still working for the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events in Chicago, and I had been holding in my heart that at some point, much later, I would open a gallery space, something I held in my heart since I was 23, and I just didn't seem to find the right time. So when my really great friend, Jeanette Fisher, who lives in San Francisco, asked me that question, and San Francisco is, of course, dealing with its own issues around place and land and location, when she said that, that was the thing that was next. And I literally, based on that conversation, started to look for a place. And I thought, that it would be on the main sort of drag, so to speak, on Halsted, if there. At least in Pilsen, I looked in a few places, and I was shown this place that, sort of off the beaten path, so to speak. So even though it's by the highway is elevated. So it isn't as if people are, driving on the highway and can say, oh, look, that looks like an interesting place. So it's really invisible in some ways. I mean, it's on the corner, and what people say often now, if I pass this place all the time and I've never been there, it's been an active gallery space for the last almost two decades. But what I'm happy about is that WITWORKS found me, and I have been holding the my grandmother's name is Bessie Sanders Scott. Bessie Guillard, Sandra Scott, Louisiana woman. And she and I have started a conversation our entire lives. She was like one of my primary caregivers, and she was a healer, and she used traditional root medicine like many of our grandparents did and great grandparents did as like the major way of healing, because there weren't a lot of hospitals. And the ones that were there, sometimes if you were a person of color, were not necessarily there. You couldn't be freely admitted. You might have a designated hospital that might be really far away for you to go to. And so even though my grandmother migrated to Los Angeles with my grandfather, she still worked root. So if you had a cold, she worked root. You had the flu, she worked root. You had something going on with your cuts, burns, she worked root. And, and the hospital for me was really if you needed some kind of technology that, we didn't have at home. But my grandmother was our primary family healer. And so I just grew up. That wasn't anything different. I imagine everybody in the whole world, that's your medicine primarily came from home. But my grandmother tried to teach me root medicine, and I just, I was too young to really appreciate what happened, what she was trying to share with me. I was 16, so I was at that age where, I was interested in life outside of the home, and I really wanted to invoke her presence. She's always with me, but to invoke her presence in a gallery space so that we could have a conversation, me about art. She was always interested in me as an artist, and she was a quilter and a hat maker and a designer. So that creative part of me, I think she really nurtured. So I really wanted to have a space where we could kind of think about things, because Alpha, you and I have been in gallery spaces. We're both, I think, in a lot of ways, culture workers, probably from birth. But, I would go into, I probably spent like most of my life in art spaces. I would say 75% of my life. And I would go into places and I'd be like, man, this is amazing. But I can feel the spirit of something here. I can feel something else. I can feel, in addition to these white walls, there's something else that needs to be said. And so really what I really tried to do was to create a space where I could invoke this indigenous practice, healing, because Chicago is definitely one of those spaces that calls out for healing, for its support and its sustainability and tenability as a city. So, that's how root work really kind of came to be. The space found me. It felt right, and ever since, it has created its own sort of energy.
And that it does. So I want to just circle back on, you said you as an artist, and I was looking at your bio, and you spent the first part of your life growing up on the West Coast in southern Los Angeles, and you were a poet, fiction writer, you're a playwright. I know you just talked about the textile arts that you were shown as, folk art. So talk a little bit about you and your writing and your, that creative part of you that, not, I don't know if a lot of people know you're a poet.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, well, and it's funny because that's sort of like not, I would say, I've come to this place in my life where my own artwork is important to me as a human being, and not necessarily how I, feel in this particular case that I need to, it's not how I make a living, and it's not something I feel like is I need necessarily at this point to be the public part of me. That being said, I started, working as a writer and a playwright, and in terms of assemblage and textile work, when I was, very young as a child, and was nurtured, and wrote plays and sort of self-produced them anywhere I could, and in little cultural centers and in churches, et cetera. And I'd be asked to do that as a performer. I acted and was cast in your variety of plays in high school and in college. And by the time really though that I was in college, I was able to sort of announce myself as a playwright, and I started to write plays and to win awards for that. And various and sundry, any type of expression I dabbled, a little bit in dance, a little bit in photography. But in terms of writing, that was the way that I expressed myself. And so When I went to grad school, I was still writing and writing plays. And then in my early 20s, I managed to be accepted to a program out of the LA Theater Center, Los Angeles Theater Center, and wrote there and had a play produced and all was going well. And I was accepted to Kaveh Kanem, a poetry fellowship. So things were, I really thought of myself primarily as a maker and not necessarily as an administrator. And then things started to shift a little bit in my personal life in terms of just a growing sense of what I was to do in my life. And I felt as if, probably this is what a playwright would think, is I felt as if I might be able to use my energy to support others. And a lot of my concerns were social concerns. I was concerned about homelessness. I've always been concerned about homelessness and poverty, racism, and illiteracy. And the more that I grew, as an artist, but working in institutions, especially libraries where I spent a lot of my time, I thought, how can I use this sort of creative problem solving, which I think artists are creative problem solvers, how do I use that to support not the fictional worlds that I'm writing about, but the world that I live in every day? And I have to say, there's been to talk about that unfolding and that revelation and how it kind of came to be and to be reaffirmed in my life, affirmed and reaffirmed, would take too long. But slowly I began to use the same sort of powers of observation, investigation, being able to syncretize voices and things like that, and to begin to think about it in terms of administration. And I just would say, one of my friends who has seen my evolution and knows me from when I was really super young, my teens, one friend asked me, when are you going to go back to making your own work? And I said, I am doing my own work. Administration is my creative practice. It's my artistic practice. So if I could say anything like on this podcast that would be of note, I would say I see my work at the Joyce Foundation as a grant maker. I see my work when I was, deputy commissioner over at the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events. I see my work in cultural administration and in institutional administration. I see all of that as part of my creative practice. So I didn't move away from art. I'm trying to, in some ways, maybe silently and quietly demonstrate what it looks like when artists get a chance to be the decision makers.
And I really applaud you on that, and it's really well stated, because not everyone has that. I've been told by other administrators that everyone doesn't have that creative part to be able to do your practice and merge it within your administrative life and what you do in the arts. And that's where we keep using that word intersect and purpose and experimental. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions on that level of intersection between professional, you answer community access, economic development, the intersection between art and social justice, and the unanticipated impacts of all of that.
Sure. I'm ready.
Okay. Give it to us. You can break it down one at a time. Unanticipated impact.
Yeah.
Unanticipated impacts. Okay.
Wow. Unanticipated impacts.
What are some of the unanticipated impacts of, I was looking online and researching, and you were on a panel recently, I don't know how recent, but within the last 2 years, when you opened your space and you were at the Department of Cultural Affairs, and you talked about new walls, that panel discussion that you were on, and there were new walls or the new galleries that are coming up in Chicago, and these are exhibition spaces outside of the museum. So if you could talk about that unanticipated impact of opening up a new wall or new walls.
Wow, first of all, I really love that, unanticipated impacts of opening up a new wall. One thing that comes to mind, I think probably, and I may have shared it on that panel, I'm not sure exactly which one you're referring to, but what I can say is that I remember
so many.
Well, you know, it's funny because you know how it is. One thing about these kinds of interactions that we're having right now is that if you're someone like me, I spend a lot of my time alone, and I spend a lot of my time not talking. And so I think when I talk, and that's by design, I have always been that type of person who both you know, is animated by people, in love with people, loves crowds, loves individuals too, but at the same time really likes retreat and really spends a lot of time not talking. So I prefer, if you know me, to text as opposed to talk on phone, and much of the consternation of a lot of people I know. But I can say that one thing that I think that happens sometimes is that when you're doing something like what we're doing now, a lot of things that we say are things that I never have vocalized before. I know for myself. So I sometimes find out what I'm thinking by talking. But I think it happened. Right? You're like, oh, okay, so that must be how I feel about that. Okay. But one thing that did happen, I'll just say, to be brief, is that that stood out for me about opening something like Rootwork is that, you know, we're documenting it now. We're talking about it now. You know, there's a lot of conversation about people and people of color. You know, we've had, like any major city, you have had, you know, these sort of waves of immigration and out-migration, right? And so now we're talking a lot about, you know, black out-migration in terms of black folks, you know, leaving Chicago, leaving Illinois for, you know, greener pastures elsewhere or for opportunity elsewhere. And so I had to show up, and I think it was the in-between space, which a show that I think was, it was only the third show or second show, I think, at Rootwork by the amazing Victor Lee Givens, who I love to work with, an artist who came to Chicago to study and now spent his time between Detroit and Texas. But his work was this immersive exhibition called The In-Between Space. And, it attracted, like, you know, a lot of people who were, like, really compelled to sort of witness or testify, much like a show that I have now. And one woman said, just to no one in particular, she said, I was thinking of, she was just going through the show, and luckily I was close within hearing range. And she said, you know, in particular, you know, I was thinking about leaving Chicago. And she said, and this show tells me I can stay, you know, a while longer. And she said this work, not this show. And I was just moved. And I think an unintentional consequence sometimes, you know, of spaces, art spaces, whether they're galleries or performance spaces or, you know, even a creative home, is that they create a haven for people, and especially for people for whom there are very few havens. And so an unanticipated a consequence of Rootwork for me has been that many people since that time have voiced that Rootwork captures something that calls to them and that they want to stay around for and have dialogue with. Another unanticipated consequence has been that, you know, Rootwork certainly can't claim the space alone, but I think that it has really directly, as people have shared, inspired other new spaces and for people to talk about things like healing and reparation and reconciliation and community healing in a really sort of direct and outward fashion. So those are things I didn't anticipate beforehand that have happened and I'm very happy about.
And you know, and congratulations on creating that. We talked about art and social justice. Your current exhibition that's up is, you know, that the Phantom Gallery with Creative Conversations, we're going into another year of advocacy work and kind of jump-starting art in action projects, like Launch the Vote, you know, jump-starting civic rituals and, you know, the People's State of the Union. I do a lot of work with the United States Arts and Cultural, which is not really a part of the government, but it's U.S. Department of Arts and Culture, and they send out a lot of things in terms of advocacy work. And I recognize on the 18th, you have a art talk that's happening, and the name of that exhibition is Talking Race, Talking Rebellion. And it's a photograph.
Yeah, that's the name of the
exhibition.
Talk. Yeah, that's the name of the talk is called Monuments. Monuments: Photographing Uprising and Rebellion in Post MLK Chicago, 1968. But the name of the talk, you're exactly right, is called Talking Race, Talking Rebellion, and that talk will be with Kofi Moyo and Deborah Crable.
And you want to kind of give a little shout out to some of the other exhibitions that you've done. I know you talked about Victor, and you've had the first exhibition that I went to was Braidwork.
Yeah, Braidwork.
The
definitely.
very first one.
Yeah, before I get to that, I'll just make sure that people know what we were talking about. So on this Thursday, January 18th, from 6:30 till 8, we will have photographer, photo documentarian, I think, Karega Kofi Moyo, in conversation with journalist Deborah Crable about the fateful day that he went out, camera in hand, and captured, I think, images of the West Side in rebellion after, in reaction to Martin Luther King's assassination, that I think in some way sort of shows what would then become, you know, a history of the West Side of Chicago, which is often overlooked, and at the same time, I think shows some images that at least everyone, you know, here in Chicago who has seen them has been just like really startled, and it shows a young person in particular, a young boy, and we're seeing this all through his eyes. So I definitely invite everyone to come out for that, you know, and the riots mean a lot to me. A riot and rebellion mean a lot to me because I grew up in an LA that was marked by, you know, had been marked by the LA uprising or LA riots, Watts riots, as they were called.
Okay, wow.
Right?
What time?
Right.
What time is the talk?
On this Thursday. And it'll be free at Rootwork Gallery, 645 West 18th Street. Some of the other shows that we've had, you talked about Braidwork. Braidwork was an amazing show with a collaboration between sculptor Sarah Beth Woods and a hair braider on the south side of Chicago, now in the south suburbs, Fatima Traore. And both of them were able to sort of pay homage to the sculptural practices, both the traditional studio practice and then the sculptural practices of African hair braiding. After that, we had a wonderful show with a very young artist whose work really Andrea Sanchez, whose work really looks at landscapes and abandoned landscapes, and I was very much interested in that. She's a Salvadoran background, and I really thought that she was doing a lot of reclamation of land and space at a time when, you know, our popular discourse is denying immigrants the opportunity to be at home, our policies to be able to have a successful living economically where they live and here in the U.S. So that was an important show. That was followed by a show called Everyday Rituals with an amazing photographer, Tanika Lewis Johnson, who in the span of a year had gone from her first gallery show at Rootwork to now a show in the Loyola University Art Museum, which is coming up. And she was in that show with Adrian Power. So she's a photographer. I asked her to document Inglewood from day to night so that we could speak to rituals, human rituals of healing and of support and of ablution and cleansing and those kinds of things that happen in spaces that we don't always deem sacred, so that we could see people who live in Inglewood and Woodlawn and Lakeview and Rogers Park and Pilsen and Bronzeville, so that we could see all of those people, you know, also as deities in a way, the way that people work in a way that's unrewarded and unrecognized on others' behalf. And she was in a show with Adrian Powers, who is an object maker, a painter, and a sculptor. That was followed by a show called Intercessions that had multiple artists and really, again, thinking about this idea of artists this time whose work really benefits others. So we had people like Chris Espinosa in that show. We had Maya Amina in that show. We had Eric Rashad Clark in that show. Tanika remained in that show. and a few other artists.
We're gonna,
Lydia Douglas.
Thank Tracy for talking with
this
us.
This podcast brought to you by the Phantom Gallery
the
Chicago Network, an artist run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at
thank
how
you,
the
Tracy.
City influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.